Welcome back to this week's episode of the Wellhouse Exorcism. This is your ghost of a host with the most, Shanna.
Hi, it's Pukwa PJ.
It's a what now?
A Pukwa PJ.
That's much better.
Forgot what I was saying for a second.
I have a name. You wanted to use your voice, but it's only for Wednesdays. So
yeah,
none of that now.
Yeah.
This episode is brought to you by Craven & Caster, Creations and Curiosities. A small business found in Blakely, PA, this is a great place to go explore handmade oddities and curios. We've been there and we love the extensive items you can look through. I especially liked all the books and custom D&D items. They even offer psychic readings and Reiki sessions. Also, they have a cat named Miles Teller Prowler, who is the Meowniger, and they have a dragon. I mean, I'm going to go for those alone. So head on down to Blakely to get your spooky on.
Yeah, I bought a lot of stuff there, and I love it.
I bought a lot of stuff.
And I want to buy more stuff.
All the stuff. All right, before we get into the episode tonight, I would like to let our listeners know that I am back on Twitter/X. A regular listener named Christopher caught up with us on Facebook, and I admitted I've been lazy with the Twitter page. Listen, everyone knows to find us on Facebook, so I totally forgot to post
Ever
up.
Since the name change, people are like,
I just don't care.
I don't want to do Twitter.
Nope, not X.
X.
Plus, I was in the end stages of my PhD, so, no more excuses. Also, to ensure I am posting on X, I created an Instagram account for the Wellhouse Exorcism. My username, or whatever it's called, is Wellhouse Exorcism, all one word, and I have cross-posted things to Games Overboard so you can find me easier. Regardless, we are always best to be reached on Facebook.
I will make a Wellhouse Exorcism post right now.
Why would you do
right
that?
Meow, if you
right
will.
Meow. You will need to search for Games Overboard, though, on Facebook, because, once again, Wellhouse Exorcism is a subsidiary of Games Overboard. So, thank you, Christopher, for shaming me into doing my job. No, he was actually very lovely about it, but I'm like, take my love! So, that's literally what I said. Oh, and I have an important update for Nurse Jackie and paranormal expert Carrie. Tim messaged us. Don't worry, the ghosts and monsters haven't gotten him. It's a spring miracle. We love you, Tim. So, this evening, honey, what are we talking about?
The books we didn't get to last week?
The book.
Maybe?
Yeah, book. The one book. Yeah.
Singular.
We're going back to Pittsburgh way to try to finish up my little series on Pittsburgh. However, I think this Wednesday's episode is going to be one more thing about Pittsburgh because I'm not quite done yet. But my references for this evening are hauntedhouses.com, hauntsandhistory.blogspot.com, onlyinyourstate.com, stitchedsmilemagazine.wordpress.com, and the book we didn't get to, Ghost Hunting Pennsylvania by Rosemary Ellen Guiley. Are you ready?
I'm ready. Actually, I'm actually going to treat this serious. I'm going to be spooked.
No, you're not.
Spook me. Make me scared. No.
I wish Penny were here to hit you. Anyway, in our area, we have the Bloomsburg Theater Ensemble. In Williamsport, there is the Community Arts Center. Every actor and stagehand will tell you not to say Macbeth on stage because of the curse that comes from the Scottish play. Bloomsburg Theater Ensemble even has a ghost light burning at all hours to help ghosts find their way. However, as of yet, I have not heard of ghosts at either of these locations. One place that does have lots of ghosts, though? The Pittsburgh Playhouse.
Okay.
Aw, yeah.
Spookiness is starting to leave already, but
no, it's not.
Okay.
All right, so the history. According to Beth Price Williams, nestled in the heart of Oakland sits a charming theater that has staged countless productions since its debut in the early part of the 20th century. But perhaps just as fascinating as the stories told on stage are the stories behind this haunted theater in Pittsburgh, if, of course, you believe in ghosts. This legendary Craft Avenue site is possibly the most renowned haunt in Pittsburgh. Built by Richard Rau, and I assume it's pronounced Rau, it's R-A-U-H. Rau? Rau?
R-A-U-H.
There's no G.
Yeah. Yeah, Rau, right?
I'm going with that.
Rau.
Rau. Ooh, I love it. That's what it is now.
Richard Rau.
Rau. It opened its doors in 1933, having had different names throughout the generations, known as the Hamlet Theater, the Summer Playhouse, and the Civic Playhouse. The oldest part of the theater was the Row. It was originally called the Hamel Street Theater. It was purchased and renovated as the family was a group of entrepreneurs and actors.
See, I'm just saying, when you said Pittsburgh Playhouse, I was thinking like a kid's indoor playhouse.
And Mickey Mouse Playhouse?
Yeah, or like, a bounce house or something like that. So this is much spookier.
The Richard Row.
This is much spookier.
Playhouse. Come inside, there's spooks inside.
Ooh, I like that.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
Moving on. Richard's wife, Helen Wayne Row, was a popular Pittsburgh actress. Their son, Richard E. Row, became an actor, teacher, and philanthropist, and in 2005 was awarded the Pittsburgh New Works Festival Lifetime Achievement Award. What a mouthful.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Typing, it was even more fun. The curtain first rose on the stage of the Pittsburgh Playhouse, now technically the Pittsburgh Playhouse of Point Park University.
Jeez.
A lot of P's, yeah.
These people, they don't know how to, like, condense names.
No, well, I think they did. It would be P-P-P-P-U.
No, I mean, just make it a shorter name. It's called the Pittsburgh Playhouse.
Pew. That's what it is. Anyway.
Or pew.
Oh, I like that. So the curtain first rose on the stage back in 1934, but the story of the playhouse begins before it actually ever became a theater. The theater wasn't the only entertainment, and I'm putting air quotes, venue, located in the house over the years. The building in which the Pittsburgh Playhouse is located at 222 Craft Avenue, in fact, went through numerous reincarnations during its history, which, if you believe the rumors, led to several ghosts haunting the theater. Before serving as a theater, the building on Craft Avenue was said to have been a synagogue, a church, a restaurant, a speakeasy, and a brothel. All at different times, of course.
Oh, I would, yeah.
Considering the theater was a combination of three different buildings, it would be important to note that the synagogue did not condone a brothel. Besides being a theater, with a restaurant in the basement at one point in time, parts of this building were rented out to a variety of tenants. Early on, a bar with a brothel helped pay the mortgage. No joke, that's how they paid their rent. As Pittsburgh became more civilized, more upstanding citizens found a home here. The Tree of Life Synagogue held services and events in the Rockwell Theater, and a wedding reception hall opened there as well. All these helped create revenue that was not from an upstairs brothel. Now,
that's where you find God, and then you cry his name later.
Wow. Okay.
No.
Well, that kind of fits into a story later. So, well, good job, guys. We're done.
Pack it in.
Now, some say Row House is once sat upon the property where the Pittsburgh Playhouse was built. Tragically, those row houses burned down, killing a mother and her beloved young daughter. The devastated mother continues to mourn the loss of her and her daughter's earthly lives. Nicknamed Weeping Eleanor, the heartbroken mother's cries have been heard echoing throughout the theater. We'll talk more about that in my ghosts section. Around 2004, the Point Park University bought the Pittsburgh Playhouse, making it the cornerstone of its performing arts program, offering its students a hands-on working experience, not only as actors and performers, but also in areas connected to the performing arts, behind the scenes. The Point Park University Pittsburgh Playhouse is home to the REP, the Professional Theater Company, and three student companies, Conservatory Theater Company, Conservatory Dance Company, and Playhouse Junior, which sounds very much like Mickey Mouse.
Yes.
Throughout the years, there are plenty of productions, and in 1 year, you'll have 18 major productions and 235 performances.
While you're sleeping, you just hear, oh!
Between the four companies...
Where'd your slippers go? Oh! Exit stage left now!
Yeah, you should. Thanks for showing yourself out.
Golly!
Rosemary Ellen Guiley, in her book Ghost Hunting Pennsylvania, had her own theories about why theaters are haunted.
What's that? All right, spooky.
I need to get a bat down
it's
here.
It's going
to
be spooky.
Yeah, I'm so scared now, although Mickey Mouse is pretty scary. All right, Rosemary Ellen Guiley stated, many hauntings are tied to intense emotional events. A theater is a focal point of emotions. The actors, actresses, and production staff are intertwined in the emotional intensity of the production, whether it be a drama, musical, or comedy. The actors must summon emotions from deep within and convey them to the audiences, who in turn are emotionally engaged in whatever takes place on the stage. Day after day of rehearsals, night after night of performances, cause the emotions to build layer upon layer. Thus, it is no surprise that ghostly residues become a part of the atmosphere, and perhaps even the structure of the theater itself. Come to a theater, and you are in a time machine of emotions, past and present. And I don't think she's wrong.
Yeah.
Because if you're doing a good job performing, people are going to be a part of that emotion with you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so. And
you're going to be channeling some pretty heavy emotions at times.
Especially when you're doing dry, vomitless Shakespeare.
That's right.
If anyone got that reference, you're no, awesome.
Man, I wonder.
Yeah, who has seen the reduced Shakespeare company? It's been a minute since that's been out, you know. So.
Well, I found out they don't sell it anymore either.
I know, it's depressing.
Yeah. So our copy is a rare commodity.
We'll have to do some kind of like, you know, video live or something for people. Have them over our house, do a video viewing.
Yeah.
Moving on. All right, so you ready to hear about the ghosts in this place?
I am.
Ready to be spooked?
I am.
Okay. According to Rosemary Ellen Guiley, there were, quote, ghosts aplenty in the theater, including actors and actresses who performed there, white lady apparitions, a weeping ghost, and even an entity called the Bouncing Red Meanie. Regardless, ghostly things happen throughout the theater, but are constantly
trying to be spooked.
But are concentrated in the Rockwell and Rao theaters and in the dressing area. So, just saying, these ghosts, nowhere to hang out. Is the Bouncing Red Meanie not scary for you? Is that why? It's a surprise tool that'll help us later.
Follow the dancing ball as you sing along.
Our first guest, as I already mentioned, was Weeping Eleanor.
Mm-hmm.
She is heard but never seen. This is the ghost of the mother crying over the loss of her child. The story goes that a fire in the row houses that existed before the theater claimed the life of herself and her daughter. Apparently, everyone else got out except for this mom and her kid, of course.
Yeah.
That's how stories go.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's usually how it goes when everyone gets out except for one person.
Her invisible ghost weeps uncontrollably in the dressing room area, and this is the location, they say, where the row houses were located before they burned down. So while I think that's kind of silly, because everyone got out except for these two people. Okay. Right where the dressing rooms are. But many people have heard the crying. So it's like, okay, there's something obviously
there.
Yeah,
that's creepy.
Yeah.
I mean, the phrase weeps uncontrollably is kind of hilarious, though.
Why?
Like, well, just like in, you know, like in the background, you're like, it's like, stop it.
I'm trying to put on my makeup. I'm trying to channel my inner happy, and you're ruining it, Eleanor. Maybe she's crying because her name's not actually Eleanor. My name is Susan! Oh my gosh.
Look at the sign! This room is dedicated to me!
It says Eleanor. All right, the next apparition is the Lady in White. No surprise, there's one of those here. A Lady in White is believed to be an unnamed actress who performed in the Hamlet Theater in the 1930s. Her story is probably more legend than fact, but does make for a juicy backdrop to her haunting.
Ooh.
Yes, like most stories, there are variations on this story.
Mm-hmm.
In one version, the Lady in White was jilted by her husband on her wedding day, as he engaged in promiscuity with a bordello girl from the upstairs brothel.
Oh, jeez.
Again,
I'll just go get some ice. I'll be right back.
Yeah, this was right after the wedding, during the reception.
Yep.
Yeah, what a jerk. The bride raced up the stairs and caught them in the act. The angry bride shot them both dead and then leapt to her death from the balcony, where she has been spotted haunting ever since, still waving a gun in her hand.
That's terrifying.
I'd like to know where she got the gun. It's your wedding day. You don't carry that in your pocket. I mean, maybe you do, but
I mean, there's got to be like a bar somewhere, right?
Well, sure, they're in the reception hall, but there's going to be guns at the bar?
The bartender, you know, the trope of the bartender with the gun under
the... This is the 1930s Pittsburgh. This is the Wild West. Everyone's just packing heat.
It's Pittsburgh.
Oh.
Just saying.
This was during the recession. All right. Gotta protect your stuff and protect your booze. Listen, I don't know. In another version, when she found out that her husband had cheated on her, she dashed up the stairs to the balcony and simply threw herself off, not hurting her husband or the lady he was having an affair with. So in that story, she found out on her wedding day that he had been cheating on her with somebody. Not from the bordello, though.
No, you gotta take him out.
Instead,
you don't just off yourself and give him an easy way out.
Wowzers. I love you very much, and I didn't do it. Moving on. Yet another version of the story says that she raced up to the balcony and then shot herself, although where and how she grabbed the gun is never explained in the story. Again, this was done without harming the husband or his lover. So she finds out he's cheating on her. She goes up to the balcony, shoots herself, and then jumps off. Never hurts the husband at all.
Hmm. I don't approve of that one either.
No, and it's kind of confusing. Why would you shoot yourself and then jump?
Because the shot didn't do it.
Was it like a one-shot pistol?
I don't know. Maybe she just freaked out after the first shot.
Ow, this hurts.
Yeah.
Regardless, she has haunted the building since. The lady has appeared to people on numerous occasions, always in a white dress. She is seen walking across the balcony with the gun still in her hand as well. She is seen standing on the stage of the theater from time to time. Allegedly, she has been captured in at least one photograph taken in one of the light projection booths.
Huh.
So, we'll do
research. Does it say what kind of gun?
I'm assuming it's just a handgun. Yeah. I don't think she's carrying a rifle around.
Well, I was going to, yeah, like rifle I could see under the bar, you know. A handgun. I don't know. She just gets
it. It has to be a handgun.
Handgun would be a lot easier to, like, try to kill yourself and miss.
And it has to be a handgun because of the actual story I have from a stagehand.
Okay.
Yes. But, again, she's kind of creepy. Like, she's just hanging out, walking around, carrying a gun. This is fine.
She points at people and yells, bang!
Funny. Wait, you really? Say that. Something scary, though. She once pointed a ghostly pistol at a stagehand's head while backstage, and she pulled the trigger. He dodged the spectral bullet, but ended up somehow, and somewhat, worse for the wear, he promptly left the building, never to return. This happened because she comes on to the row stage occasionally, when provoked or enticed. So, it was a male on the staff, and he was working on a light for a production on the row stage theater. Something about him must have reminded the lady in white of her unfaithful husband.
Yeek.
So, in the full story, the worker watched in amazement when she appeared on stage and approached him with probably an angry glint in her eye.
I would assume so.
She pulled a gun from her dress, pointed it at him, like point blank, pulled the trigger, and then she vanished. But he took the hint and he quit his position and just left. He never came back to the playhouse.
Wow.
Yeah. So, fun story.
That would be terrifying. That'd be genuinely terrifying. But at the same time, I think I'd be kind of angry. And I'd be like, you know what? I'm coming back now. Like, what are you going to do to me? What are you going to do? You're just going to show up and make another loud noise at me again?
Well, ghosts have been known to, like, hurt people. So.
True. But has she?
But maybe there's, like, realness to this where maybe he was cheating. Maybe he was being a naughty boy.
Channeling the inner ex.
So he's like...
And she felt it on him.
Yes. Well, this one, she's enticed, provoked, so she could sense him being infidelitous.
Yeah. Maybe. Maybe.
Well, our next ghost has the best name of all the names.
It's the Big Red Meanie.
No.
Oh.
John Johns.
I would like to say it's unique, but it's the opposite.
They call him JJ sometimes. But yeah.
I wonder where that came from.
John Johns. This person was an actor who performed at the Playhouse throughout the 1950s. He died in his dressing room, originally number
in
6.
In his long johns.
I actually knew you were going to make that joke, fun fact. I said to myself, he's going to do this. Anyway, he died in his dressing room, which was originally number 6, but later was turned to number 7 in 1960. You done laughing now?
Because you mentioned the long johns were covering his little john.
This is a family-friendly podcast. Depending on the version of the story you read, he died in one of several ways. In one version, he was an accountant by day and a stage actor by night, who began performing at the Playhouse in the 30s. It's said that he suffered a heart attack while at a banquet in the downstairs restaurant. His castmates carried him up to his dressing room, number 7 now, to wait for an ambulance, but Johns died before they could get him inside. In another version, he collapsed from a heart attack after a performance and died before the ambulance arrived. Regardless, people hear him walking up the steps to his old dressing room, number 7, always stopping just short of the door. Johns occasionally appears wandering the playhouse as well.
Hmm.
Now, this is pretty cool. Students and staff have seen him dressed in a tux, inspecting the sets and props of the stage productions seen in the Rao Theater and the Rockwell Theater, perhaps trying to be useful and involved, excited about the upcoming productions. JJ has sometimes been spotted dancing on stage with the White Lady.
Oh.
That's pretty cool. Johns also fancies himself a director, intently watching the rehearsals from the seats, and will occasionally share some tricks of the trade or criticism with the actors.
Get off the stage!
That would be his criticism, I guess. You suck!
Hey, go towards the light, buddy! Keep your comments to yourself!
Go talk to Shakespeare, if he's in heaven. If he's not, then fine. Interestingly, I thought you were going to say something else. Okay. Interestingly, seats in the main auditorium have name plaques on them. Some are for actors and others are for patrons and donors. The seat bearing the name of John Johns reportedly depresses on its own during a performance if the ghost of Johns is present.
They reserve it for the Phantom.
Yes. Box number 5 will be open. Anyway, a reader, Deb, once wrote, "When I was a student, I had some experiences at the Playhouse." So, he didn't die upstairs going to his number room 6-7. Mm-hmm. Didn't have a heart attack on stage. He didn't die of some food illness, whatever, from the restaurant or a heart attack in the restaurant. He died in a veterans hospital because Bill Leach knew the guy. So, John Johns, terrible name, actually existed.
John Jacob Jingleheimer.
No, this is John Johns. Jeez, pay attention.
Not Chris Christopherson either.
No, not that either.
John Johns.
But she did have experiences at the Playhouse. So there is ghostly stuff happening.
Mm-hmm.
But John Johns did not die there.
I just can't.
That's, I know.
John Johns.
Well, do you want to hear about Gorgeous George instead? That make you feel better?
This sounds familiar. Gorgeous George.
What does Gorgeous George look like to you?
Isn't he the gangster? Wasn't he the gangster? Who was that?
No,
that's Babyface George. Babyface George?
I don't know.
From Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? The guy that shot the cows?
I thought you were asking me, like, do I look like someone who's a part of a mafia? Yeah, no, George, I'll hook you up. No, this Gorgeous George is anything
Babyface
but...
Babyface Nelson, sorry.
That's not even close to George.
Off. Who's
Nelson?
What was I thinking of?
I don't know, but I'm confused. Well, Gorgeous George, not Nelson, is anything but handsome. He appears to the living with a green face that is decomposing. So it's like the mask,
wow.
But not in a good way. He also has a disgustingly rank smell. So you can smell him coming.
That's awesome.
Mm.
At least you're prepared.
I guess. But here's the thing. He has a wonderful time getting his chuckles by peeking and tapping on the window of the costume shop or poking people on the shoulder and scaring them when they turn around. Exactly. He likes to watch their shock.
Can you hear footsteps running away?
Can I finish? He likes to watch their shock when they turn and see his rotting visage. Then he poof disappears, cackling maniacally. That's what he does. Tap, tap, tap. Exactly. Like, I don't know why, but
it's like a ding dong ditcher.
It It's,
oh my god, I'm good.
It's scarier to me than Weeping Eleanor. Because, like, not again, son of a nutcracker. Like,
well, yeah, I mean, seeing a rotting face, like, you know, when you turn around would definitely be more terrifying than just hearing, well, I don't, hearing, like, random weeping, though, that's freaky. That would mess me up.
Do you feel like at some point you'd just be annoyed by it, though?
I mean, that's what I said earlier, yeah.
Like, you just turn the radio, like, you know what, radio on, there we go, like, done.
Just drown it out. And she gets louder.
Oh, Eleanor! It's Susan! All right, anyway. He also likes to scare people around the prop room and in the back of the theater. No one knows exactly where he came from. Maybe he just enjoys the Playhouse company. He just likes doing it. But I imagine the mask is Jim Carrey, and that's his laugh. Ugh. Anyway. Do you want to hear about the bouncing red meanie now?
Oh, boy, do I.
Today, people see this entity of a clown floating around midair and bouncing off the walls and ceiling of the Rockwell Theater, still worrying about an event or circumstance that must worry him. Others see him as a red-colored man who paces around as though agitated.
I'm so confused. So it's a clown bouncing off the walls and ceiling.
According to only one version
and of events. And worrying.
About something.
About something.
Can I read?
No, because this is bizarre. I was expecting something a lot funnier, and this is just confusing.
Because I haven't finished talking about it yet.
Fine.
Others see him as a red-colored man who paces around as though agitated. In this rendition, he is seen as a red ball of light that bounces off walls and flies through the air. Because of this, he is sometimes called the Bouncing Loony. And this is the most common rendition of him, a red ball of light.
Okay.
Hence the bouncing red meanie.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how did he get there? A famous story of him goes like this. On Halloween night in 1974, a group of students held a seance to try to communicate with a ghostly gang at the playhouse. They conjured up a little more than they bargained for. The red figure appeared about 10 minutes into the seance. There is a possibility that these students accidentally invited this new entity into the playhouse on this night.
Surprise!
Don't do it unless you know what you're doing. But it seems like they brought some kind of demonic entity in. Well, during their trance, they looked at the stage. On it was a man with a gashed gray face, dressed in red from head to toe, pacing back and forth. He picked up steam every time he crossed the stage, until eventually he was going so fast that he rose in the air and began bouncing off the walls. As this happened, the house phones in the theater began ringing, distracting them. One student's gaze turned toward the seats, and the other eyes followed hers. They found that the auditorium was completely filled with people dressed in turn-of-the-century outfits, starched collars, dark jackets, and evening gowns. A spotlight focused on the bouncing red meanie. He turned toward the crowd and the audience broke into a silent ovation, his reward for the evening's performance.
This is like something out of Coraline, right?
Isn't it cool?
It's really cool, but so confusing.
But like everyone mentions it, and even like Rosemary, like Guiley, like her comments on it were like pretty creepy too. Regardless, it manifests itself now as a man or a red ball-shaped light. And his pleasure is to chase people at a breakneck speed.
And then what?
That's it. Just scare the crap out of you. He just
disappears.
Yeah. The ball of light just poof.
It's weird.
They will see him pacing back and forth, though, too. Like, that still happens.
Yeah.
I don't know. So, like, this creeps me out. Because was he a clown? Or was he not a clown? Because only in one rendition.
Yeah, and why is he dressed all in red? Why is he zip back and forth and...
And all I can think,
fly around?
Like as an English teacher myself, you know, there is a moment in Macbeth where Macbeth has this very famous quote where he says, "I am in blood, stepped in so far that should I wade no more, returning were as tedious as going o'er," which is supposed to mean that he's involved himself in so many murders that it's
easier to just go with the flow than try to...
Than to turn back and become a decent human being again.
Yeah.
And so, like, the idea of him wading across this, like, river of blood creates this, like, really vivid imagery, you know,
yeah.
Of his bloody reign. And so I wonder, like, if you were to put that on stage, could this be a person wearing all red to symbolize him in this bloody river?
Mm.
So, like, I kind of, like, again, because I already quoted Macbeth, or I mentioned the play earlier, and there's that silent ovation. Why else would a person be wearing red and be looking agitated on stage? I can't think of many plays. Maybe our listeners can, but I can't think of many that actually have, like, that long of a blood reference. Because Hamlet mm-hmm. has some, like, you know, really nice soliloquies, but nothing that really goes along with that.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Maybe he was acting in Macbeth. And it is the Scottish play.
It is.
Just saying. So, but the bouncing red meanie, still a meanie there. Meanie, cool. Meanie, bopperini.
See, like, when I hear about orbs and stuff like that these days, like, I grow less and less interested in pictures of orbs because mm-hmm. I'm just like, it's dust. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just dust. But when people see, like, an actual orb with their own two eyes, because they often emanate light and things like that, that's a whole different ball game then. Mm-hmm.
Well, and this is me being a loser, but I was reading some articles with my students, my eighth graders, to show them, like, you know, what I do in Gifted, because they were asking, what do you actually do in Gifted? And I said, well, I discuss Feynman and his rainbow slit experiment. That's what I do for fun. But Feynman, a really well-known physicist, tried to explain how rainbows work. Like, why do we see color? Mm-hmm. And so you could say, you know, it's light refracting, bouncing, whatever. But what is it that it's bouncing off of? And why is it creating this color? Why is there a phosphorescence? Mm-hmm. So it's not just we know that it's bouncing off water. It's the why. And what's in the mm-hmm. water to make it colorful, you know? So there has, because water should absorb it or it should pass through. If you think about it, it should curve maybe. Like when you have a bubble or an oil spill, like on the ground, you have that color that, like, you know, pretty little sheen.
Yeah, that chromatic shift.
Yeah, because you have photons that have canceled each other out in a way, and what you're seeing is the leftover. That color is the leftover that hasn't been canceled out.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an interesting scenario. So when I think of orbs and light, or if they're colored like this, how is there a cancellation of color to have red as the orb color? See, now I'm going in too deep. Now I need to take a nap.
Well, I mean, I know from a physics standpoint, red is the least amount of energy required. Mm-hmm. It's like the quote unquote, like, coolest temperature.
Yeah.
Which is funny because, like, all symbology and movies and art and everything.
Did you say symbology?
I did. Symbolism. And
I have to get divorced now. I'm sorry. It was a great.
I didn't pay attention to Willem Dafoe. But, you know, they all tell us that red is the hot color, you know, but mm-hmm. actually purple is the hottest.
Well, it is, but when you're like, I think when you're looking at, like, fire and you're looking at blood, I think it really comes from the idea that blood is bad. You don't want to see blood.
Yeah,
that
exactly,
means that you're
yeah.
hurt.
But I'm getting at that, like, a red orb would mean it's something that can form easily because mm-hmm. it requires little amount of energy.
Yeah.
You know? So maybe that's why.
Mm-hmm. Or he's just evil.
Ooh.
Look at us discussing physics. Aren't we so cool?
We're so smart.
What other podcast is a lot of podcasts are doing that.
Yeah.
Anyway, so there are some unknown presences.
What other podcasts come from a formerly haunted basement?
That's true. And record in their formerly haunted basement.
That's right.
And have master's degree and PhDs.
That's right.
And discuss physics on the side for fun.
And play board games.
Well, that's just a cool and additive.
Podcast about board games.
That's because you're a nerd, and that's fine.
Darn right of those.
If you look at Craven and Caster, just as a plug for them again, they sell D&D stuff while also
and
being
board
creepy.
Games.
That's right. It's cool to be weird.
Yeah.
And it's hip to be board gamey.
That's right.
Anyway, there is an unknown presence, and there's also a heavy feeling. In certain areas of the Pittsburgh Playhouse.
Okay.
So one thing that was mentioned by Guiley in her book is that there is a male and there's a female, and they are dancing on the stage of the Rau Theater. However, in my other research, people believe that John Johns has been seen dancing with the White Lady.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if she's referencing that or if this is a different spectral couple, because, you know, when you have that like imprint of ghosts who like were enjoyed their time as dancers.
Yeah.
Like I mentioned in a previous story, maybe it's just them in one of their happy moments and it's just like a time stamp that's kind of stuck there and it just plays on a loop.
Yeah. A residual haunt.
Yeah. So maybe that's what's going on there. Maybe it is John Johns and the Lady in White. I don't know.
So do we have confirmation that it is, in fact, John Johns? Like, do we know this?
He is the only, of all these possible specters, he's the only person, only ghost, that has been vetted, proven that he was the person who was there, you know, and people have seen him because he actually will come up and talk to people and say, because he's like a fully formed image, and he'll give them ideas and like hints. And then when they see pictures, they go, holy crap, that was him.
Gotcha.
So, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I think of all of the ones that are here, I believe in his story the most, although the red meanie kind of freaks me out.
Yeah.
Because if they did bring something in through a seance, like, yeah, don't touch Ouija boards. You don't do seances. I don't understand. Anyway, there's also alleged to be some ghostly shenanigans that occur in the ticket office, but its mischievous poltergeist pales compared to the antics of the phantom posse working the building. An unknown presence on the steps leading up to the ladies' room in the main theater makes people feel very uncomfortable. In addition, the balcony of the Rockwell has a, quote, heavy feeling to some people. I mean, if some chick is holding a gun and offed herself somehow, well, maybe that's what the heavy feeling's from.
That could just be a fear cage, too. So for those who are uninformed on what that is, a fear cage is essentially in old... It's mostly just in old buildings, places where there's like uninsulated wiring and things like that. The electromagnetic fields that come off of these wires will generate feelings of paranoia, of heaviness, of fear, and things like that around you. And some people are like super susceptible to them. Mm-hmm. And judging by the age of this theater, that's very well possible.
The fact that it's three different buildings, that's kind of all been hodgepodge together, too.
Yeah, right. So that I'm willing to... Yeah, it could be paranormal because there's a lot of crap going on in this theater. But that one I'm easily ready to just say could be fear cage. Like, get an EMF detector in here and see what's going on.
Well, for my next part, I have some real-life stories from a man with the last name Kirchman and another man with the last name Diasis, because they are workers, or were workers, for the Playhouse, and they have their own creepy experiences.
Okay.
So, again, lend some credibility.
Is that the book?
I have the book in front of me,
You have the book?
Isn't it pretty? It's spoopy.
It's a tower?
I think it's a turret. I have no idea. Oh, it's Fort Mifflin.
Oh. Huh.
Anywho, you ready?
Yes.
Kirschman has had a variety of... So I'm taking this from Ghost Hunting Pennsylvania, Rosemary Ellen Guiley, on, you know, the ghost hunting that happens here in Western Pennsylvania. And it is stuff that is, like, quoted from Kirschman word for word, and then Diasis later, same thing. So it says, Kirschman has had a variety of experiences over the years. I've always felt a presence in this building, but I've never felt threatened by it, he said. If there are ghosts, I've always tried to communicate with them. He once worked as the house manager, opening and closing the building. In the morning, he arrived before anyone else and was alone in the building for a while. One area he unlocked held the administrative offices. At the time, the phones were big push-button models with rows of lighted buttons on the bottom for multiple call lines. One morning I came in and went into one of the offices and saw that the phone had all five or six buttons lit, said Kirschman. I knew that in order for them to be all lit, someone had to be on all of those lines, and I knew I was the only one in the building. So I picked up the phone and heard multi-level conversations, one over the top of the other. I tried every button and got the same thing.
No, that's messed up. That's creepy.
He said into the phone, "Hello?" Hello? But no one talking paid him any attention, nor could he understand anything being said. The voices were breathy, and whatever they were saying was all a jumble. Hello? Hello? Still no response. So, that's what's going on.
He said they're breathy voices, though, so I was like... I love chicken.
Good. Okay.
Meow mix, please. Okay.
Beautiful. It didn't go away for a good 10 minutes, he said. Then the lights just went off all at once. It was kind of scary. It never happened again, at least to his knowledge. Were spirits of the dead having a party line for a phone fest? Phone calls from the dead are a known paranormal phenomenon.
Do, 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 do.
Thank you. On another occasion, Kirschman was locking up for the night. He locked the two main accesses to the building and was in the process of locking up the administrative office area when a male voice boomed out of thin air behind him. Alfred! Hey, Alfred! Kirschman turned, but no one was present.
Alfred, good fellow!
By the way, that's his first name.
Put her there!
So this ghost knows his name.
Jolly good.
Who was the mysterious man hailing him? I took it to be Gorgeous George, who likes to sneak up behind people, Kirschman said. There have been other things, too, he went on. Doors in the dressing rooms have jiggled on me. When I was locking up in that area, I would walk down the hall, saying out loud, I'm locking up, okay? Get out of the rooms now! The door handles of the dressing rooms would jiggle by themselves. I used to paint scenery at night by myself. I would hear moaning sounds all night. It may have been air in the pipes, but it did sound like a person moaning. I would say, what's the matter? What are you trying to tell me? I never got any answer.
Ooh.
It just makes me think of The Office.
I thought I heard moaning. I'll look into it in the morning.
Kirschman introduced me to Dennis Diasis, who works on the housekeeping and maintenance staff.
Just sounds wrong.
Dennis? Sorry. Dennis has been spooked a number of times while working by himself in the theater late at night or early in the morning. Normally, he prefers to work alone, but the ghostly phenomena at the theater have caused him to alter his hours. I was doing a project late one night, stripping the floor down in the basement, Dennis told me. I told the guard to lock everything up. Before he left, I walked around with him to make sure everything was locked up. I went downstairs and started the stripping and the waxing. Around midnight, or 1 o'clock in the morning, I went back upstairs to get my lunch. I found the door to the upstairs wide open. I know for a fact that the guard locked the door, and there was nobody here except for me. I was shocked. I thought maybe the guard forgot something and came back, but the light was off upstairs. So he called out, "Is anybody there?" There was no answer. Chilled in a peculiar way, he went around and screamed repeatedly, "Is anybody here?" Silence. Dennis looked at me, shook his head, and laughed. It was a moment where all my hair stood up, he said. There was no way that door could open. I decided to leave, and I went home. Ever since then, I don't stay past midnight. He also now prefers to arrive in the morning when a guard will be present. And he said...
Or anyone.
Anyone, yeah. There were a couple of times when I came in at 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning, and I'd be here by myself, he said. I would hear footsteps and knocking on the walls. Sometimes when I'd be waxing or buffing the floor, a wind, like a person walking, would go past, and I got chilled. I'd be cleaning dressing rooms and would hear footsteps. I didn't know that an actor had died in one of the rooms until Alfred told me. That was spooky. I kind of got used to it, Dennis said. Sometimes I would bring a radio to avoid the noise. Now I don't work here by myself anymore. I make sure that at least one guard is here.
Yeah.
But, like, so to have real people talking about what they're experiencing, I just find that to be fascinating, but also to be validating.
Yeah. Much more compelling, too.
Mm-hmm. And it's always the boring stuff that I think proves that it's haunted.
It's more believable.
Yeah. Because, like, our house, as we mentioned multiple times on this podcast, you know, was in fact haunted. And there are some really scary stories, like the basement or the thing in Sophie's bedroom, mm-hmm. you know. Those things are irrefutable. But most of the haunting was stuff that was just annoying.
Mm-hmm.
Would just tick you off. Like, give me the freaking keys. Give me the flip-flop. Why is that light on? Come on, man. Do something helpful for once. Give me back my purple dress, you know. It's the little things that start to add up. And hearing the giggling or hearing the footsteps, it's just unnerving. And
yeah.
I think you said it multiple times, the idea that you just know that you're not alone, that feeling that there's something
yeah.
there.
Yeah.
playing a radio is not going to dull the sound. But if you think about it, we kept the house busy all the time. We always had people over visiting. And I think that may have been in part so we weren't alone.
Probably. It's probably a big reason why I don't do anything without a podcast or a YouTube video or music playing. Like, there's never silence.
Yeah, you're never quiet. Yeah, no. I noticed that. Well, and, you know, we had a nice weekend where yesterday we went out shopping with the kids for reals. No pickup orders. We actually went into the stores because we had time. We came back, we mowed the lawn, and the kids are like, are we going anywhere else? And I go, heck no, I'm going to sit right here on my tuchus and I'm going to enjoy sitting on the couch and, you know, do some work and relax. Take a nap, maybe. Because I have no problem being in this house alone now because it feels different, you know? But I could not be in this place alone. This would, it would bother me.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm very susceptible to, like, the feelings of places.
Yeah.
Like, just being at, you know, ESP and being there with you guys enough, I was just like, I want to stay quiet and stay very small and be ignored. You know, that's what I want to be here. I couldn't be here alone.
Well, Eastern State does that by design, too, just because every little sound echoes down those halls. So it's designed to be that way.
But there's a feeling.
Oh, there is a feeling.
Yeah, you can't get past that. It just feels awkward and scary. And not even scary. I just feel sad. I just, like I've always said, like, I just feel sad there. I actually had a dream about that place last night.
Yeah.
In and around being annoyed by our four-year-old who wouldn't let me leave his bedroom. I had a nightmare.
As you were in your own prison.
If you will, yes. My very small prison. I had a dream.
With a very small guard.
He just wouldn't let me leave. He held me down. But yeah, I had a nightmare about it last night. It was just like we were walking into some of the, you know, the jail rooms, you know. And we walked into one room and I saw this like black entity. Like it was just like a smoke almost. But it was all black in a corner. And I was like, I'm not going in there. And you and Laura are like, we're going in. And so in you guys go. And then you were attacked by this thing. I'm like, security? I don't know how we fight this. Get the hose? And then I woke up. But anyway. So you're welcome. But I was also being held down by a prisoner at that point. Or by the warden. So, but there is something very important I would like to note at the conclusion of all of this. Because those are all the ghosts.
Okay.
Those are all the stories. The Pittsburgh Playhouse was renovated and brought up to date with new seats, new equipment, and new lighting and sound, making it a state-of-the-art group of theaters by the Point Park University. There were three main stages, the Rockwell Theater, the Rao Theater, and the Studio Theater, located in the basement area. It really was quite an impressive space for students to learn their craft in the performing arts. However, notice my use of the past tense here. The Oakland location was demolished very recently, and a new theater of the same name opened in downtown Pittsburgh. The original location I mentioned in my entire story no longer exists.
Oh.
So what happened to the ghosts? No one knows.
Yeah.
However, the original Pittsburgh Playhouse had these cool ghosts, all of which were very active. So I'd be interested to know, like, if there's some red ball bouncing around Oakland.
Yeah, right.
But I always ask at the end, is it haunted? No, because it's gone.
Are the grounds haunted, though?
Plus, I'm wondering, like, could you still hear the weeping if you walked along there?
Yeah, like, what story was it where you'd see, like, only half of a ghost sticking up because this bottom half was, like, in the ground, you know, because the house is higher than it used to be? You know, like, things like that. You know, that's are they still there in the...
And it just repeating itself over and over. It would be interesting, but I actually have no idea.
I mean, if they're intelligent haunts, which it sounds like most of them are, they wouldn't be, you know.
Where else would they go? Is the big red meanie waiting for another seance to pop in?
Maybe.
I want it known that I don't want him here. So if if he's quoting Macbeth, that's why he's in that... That's why, you know what? Because of him doing Macbeth, that's why I got torn down. The end. I nailed it. Figured it out. Anyway, anything else you want to say to our listeners?
No, I don't. No, I think. Speaking of dreams, it reminds me that at some point we should share my dream.
Yeah, it'll be too long to add on to this.
Yeah,
episode.
Not this episode.
It could be one of our mini-sodes.
Oh, yeah.
Do you notice I use mini-sodes there?
I see that.
Did it make you happy?
It does.
Felt a little weird. Don't like it. Nope.
So what do you think?
Like when I'm reading people's stories who have worked there, and when there's the actual like vetting that there was a person for John Johns, for example, and for Alfred to be like, I just figured it was Gorgeous George because, you know, that guy's full of shenanigans.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, so they know these ghosts and they're used to it. You know, it becomes just like second nature for them. So they're used to the phenomena. Thank you. So I 100% think it was haunted, and I'm very sad to see that it's gone. But, I mean, it is what it is. If they have a better view, or a better theater that's more state-of-the-art, not three random separate buildings all put together, I get it. But what a waste of money. Then you update everything, renovate it all, and then go, kidding.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
It's obnoxious.
Unless there's a reason for demolishing it.
No, that's... That was just... Anyway. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Wellhouse Exorcism. Find us on Instagram as, again, username, Wellhouse Exorcism, all one word, Twitter/X, or on Facebook under Games Overboard. Free feel to hop on our website as well, which is gamesoverboard.com. Please email us. We want to hear from you. Facebook message us specifically, because that's just the easiest way.
Mm-hmm.
You can also find us on Reddit, and you can go to our Wellhouse Exorcism subreddit. Did I use those terms correctly?
You did.
Woo-woo! Talk to us there. And again, I want to give a special shout-out to Chris. So thank you, Christopher.
Hey, Chris.
For making me realize I suck at Twitter. Anyway, or I have to actually work sometimes. But as always... Think spooky thoughts. Do 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 do.
Phenomena.
Do 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 do.
Phenomena.
Do 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 do. Do 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 do.